Welcome to this latest edition, this Saturday morning edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 23rd of January, 2021. I'm your host, the Real Gerald Quinn. I'm doing a bit of a throwback show in terms of the time slot. Remember, we used to do this program, podcast, when it started out in 2008 as the Saturday morning wake-up call every Saturday morning. And early too, we would do this podcast. So kind of back to, you know, recording this on a Saturday morning. I've been really anxious to get this podcast, get this particular podcast out, to be honest with you. A lot going on, busy weekend, a busy week in the world of sports and also pop culture as well. Definitely happy to be with you. I hope everybody out there has been safe. It's still a pandemic, even though I'll tell you later. I was out yet last night. I have a story for later, but I'm gonna begin with some sad news. It's sad, but not sad because death is always a two-way street in regards to, you know, the sadness of somebody passing away with the coinciding with the celebration of their lives. And I think that perfectly describes what encapsulates what Hank Aaron's life was, just a celebration. Hank Aaron, of course, passed away yesterday at the age of 86. He was just simply one of the, you know, greatest baseball players of all time. We all know this. And one of the games and one of sports' greatest gentlemen. Nobody, like, there is a few athletes that will ever be as respected as one Henry Aaron. You barely heard a bad word ever said about him, especially in the latter years of his life. He, just came off as just a humble, wise, and, he came off as the grandfather you would want to chill with and have conversations with. He very much so came off as that person. And here's a guy who, and I'm a Barry Bonds fan, but, Barry, we know Barry took steroids. And so in my mind, Hank Aaron has always been the real, true home run king in Major League Baseball. And you talk about someone that had to go through some shit during that time. And as he's approaching that record, remember, at the time, was the most hallowed record, maybe in all the sports, not just baseball, in all the sports. Babe Ruth's home run record, and there were you read reports, articles about that. Articles you've heard him tell various stories, a number of stories in various interviews. It's remarkable that he even wasn't in the hospital for stress or complications, due to just the outright, the hell that he had to go through during that time period when he broke that record, because the death threats, having to stay, have his food delivered by people, the security he had, cops with him or personal security, read some of those reports. I can't imagine having to do that, having to go through that as you approach this hallowed mark. And, the bottom line was, and not much has changed, it was a black man breaking the record of, the baseball's great white guy. And that's what Babe Ruth was. We know Babe Ruth was an all-time great baseball player in his own right, by most accounts considered to be the greatest of all time. But you know, it was the fact that this was a black man breaking a record of a white baseball player. And, you know, the visceral that he dealt with, and he dealt with it with class and dignity, and which carried out throughout the course of his life. And there was not, you know, we can get in a debate all we want about who's the greatest baseball player. And, you know, he only won one MVP. Did win the World Series MVP as well. But there was not Hank Aaron, without question, is the most consistent, to me, most consistent baseball player of all time. You're talking about 30 home runs in 15 different seasons. You see the numbers here, 750, you know, ranks second, first, fourth, and third all time in all the major, in, you know, home runs, RBIs, runs scored, and hits. And in terms of, you know, you see these guys today who are either home run or strikeout. And to, you know, if you strike out 100 times that today, that would be considered great. And these guys are striking out like, you know, 200 times or more. Hank Aaron, in his 23 years, he struck out 100 times, zero times. Not once did he ever strike out 100 times. Think about that. Not once did he strike out 100 times in a season. So, which, and, you know, you look at some, you know, Barry Bonds had one year where he struck out in his career. I think Barry Bonds played 22 seasons where he struck out 100 times. And that was his rookie year when I believe he was the leadoff hitter at that stage in his career. Ted Williams, Babe Ruth, those guys never struck out 100 times in their careers. Great power hitters with a mixture of obviously being able to put the ball in play. So just a remarkable stat, to say the least. Again, he he dies as a successful businessman, very in terms of the auto business, owned a number of car dealerships in Georgia, and he never stopped fighting against racial inequality. I heard this, I wasn't devastated because he's 86. So, you live 86, you get 86 years out of his life, you got your money's worth. But it was sad to hear this news. But again, to me, I look at this as more of a celebration with Hank Aaron, considering everything that he stood for, everything that, you know, he did over the course of his life. And again, there was not a more better, there's not a more respected baseball player in the history of the sport. And, you know, certainly he certainly will be missed. And he did, again, as a baseball player, there are very few baseball players that, just to say he's one of the all-time greats is an understatement. Again, just consistency. And I think what he was off on the field typified what he was off the field. He was just consistent. Just consistent, day in, day out, how he lived his life. And so it makes perfect sense, the type of player he was, in contrast to the type of person he was. Not, you know, and that we all know that always doesn't trend. That always doesn't take place. You can get guys who are great, you know, great baseball players, great athletes who are not the greatest people, but not the most well-liked people. Not the most respected people off the field. That was not the case with one hammer and Hank Aaron, dead at the age of 86. And again, just fabulous, phenomenal career and life. Rillo headlines for the morning. Larry King, legendary broadcaster, passes away at the age of 87. Remember, he dealt earlier this year, I believe in the summertime, had some COVID-related complications. He had a number of health issues leading up to this as well. But we talk about a legend, another legend, you know, Larry King. And again, I'm being, you know, who I am as far as doing this podcast thing for the past 13 years now. I love, one of my favorite parts of it is interviewing people. And there, you know, has been very few people that have walked the faces of this earth that that has been better at interviewing people than Larry King. Larry King, you know, had the show on CNN, Larry King Live from 85 to 2010. 50,000 interviews over the course of his career. He interviewed everybody. If you name the person, he probably interviewed them. Dignitaries to celebrities to presidents to ex-presidents, everybody, it seems like he interviewed. And again, he said that he did very little prep work in terms of his interviews. Wanted the questions to be spontaneous, wanted to create a sense of comfort. And he did that to a T, and he did that, he perfectly executed that game plan as far as his interviews goes. And again, I love great interviews. I'm fascinated by them. I Oprah Winfrey's of the world, Ted Koppel's, Charlie Rose's, you can go across the board. I love there is an art form to it. And this guy was near or at the top of the heap for a long time doing those interviews. And again, a guy that could interview anyone. He did it at the highest of levels. So he passes away at the 87, at the age of 87. Hell, lived a full life, to say the least. The thing about it is when you live that long, and if you have kids, unfortunately, you may see your kids pass away. He lost two of his kids. One of them recently in 2020. So certainly can I imagine that pain of watching your kid, of you watching your son or daughter die before you. But he lived a full life. He's married. I think he married like 8 times. And he said that. Listen, he chose his career over his personal life and over his marriage. And so, if you do that, then you're going to be married. Chances are you will be married a number of times if you choose your life, your career over your wife, or in his case, wives. But he was a whole legend. Anyone who, like myself, is trying to aspire to be a great interviewer, you certainly have to watch Larry King interviews and take some jewels and gems away from how he conducted himself and how he conducted interviews per se. Because he was one of the best in the world, not just in the country, not just amongst the entertainment circles. He was one of the best interviewers in the world. The Washington football team making some news for the right reasons. As of right now, the Washington football team has, hired a first full-time lady coach in Jennifer King. Congratulations to her. Of course, she worked with Ron Rivera back in Carolina. They've hired Mark Mayhew as a general manager. And of course, they have their team president is also an African-American. So, and as far as the diversity goes, they are knocking it out of the park. Now, Mark Mayhew is only one of 4 black general managers, along with Chris Greer in Miami, Detroit. Both Detroit and Atlanta just hired, and also hired both Detroit and Atlanta just hired African American general managers as well. So they're only 4 out of 32. It's progress, but still definitely a long way to go. And we'll talk more about that later on in the podcast. Also hired to be the executive vice president is Marty Herney. Marty Herney, of course, worked with Ron Rivera back in Carolina. So there are 2 ways to look at this to me. Number one, give Washington all the credit in the world for this. In a time where the NFL gets hammered, and rightfully so, for its lack of diversity, especially amongst coaches and general managers and people in positions of power. So they deserve all the credit in the world for that. I reluctantly give it to Daniel Snyder. I think this is more on Ron Rivera, but Snyder does own the team. So, you have to toss him a couple bones from that standpoint. So from that standpoint, it's great and something that you love to see. Hopefully something that continues throughout the course of the NFL, though, you know, the NFL, it continues to struggle in regards to hiring African-American coaches, as we see this offseason. The part about this that would be concerning as a football, as someone who's rooted for this team for the better part of, I would say, 35 years, is the fact that you have a situation where the coach in Ron Rivera is calling basically all the shots. Like, Ron Rivera is basically second to Daniel Snyder in the power construct of the Washington football team. Like Ron Rivera answers to Daniel Snyder and no one else. So Ron Rivera coordinated these interviews. He hired both Mayhew. He hired Jennifer King. He hired Marty Herney. So this is one of these situations where the coach has all the power. And you know what? God bless Ron Rivera, his agent as well. You know, it is not you can't find a better situation for a coach in terms of job security than basically being your own boss in many ways. So I'm not mad at Ron Rivera at all. We all wish we could be in that position. But it's not how traditionally that organizations, championship organizations, have been run. Normally you go owner, player personnel guy, vice president, and then or general manager, whatever title, whatever you want to call it, and then coach. And then there's a connection between the coach and the GM / vice president. Rivera did a tremendous job this year with the team. They overachieved. They made the playoffs, won a division, played well in the playoff game, and the loss against Tampa Bay. So, he was right about Dwayne Haskins. It wasn't high on it at the beginning and turned out to be right about that in regards to this guy was not the quarterback for this team. I don't think Ron Rivera is on the status of coaches that I would give that type of power to. Be perfectly honest with you. I know he's been to a Super Bowl, but he's also had some so-so seasons and some bad seasons with Carolina. I think he's a good coach. I don't think he's a great coach. And the bottom line is, even past the ability to coach, we know, like, holding those two jobs is just not – it doesn't lead to success when a coach has that kind of power. And we've only seen it really twice in the history of the sport in recent memory. Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick. Now, Belichick won Super Bowls, but keep in mind, Belichick probably gets too much credit for his front office and personnel decisions. Scott Paoli was a major part of those New England Super Bowls that were won. Major part of it. To be honest, in that franchise, doesn't get enough credit. And we've seen what that has looked like the past couple of years with Belichick as their talent has eroded. And now we're seeing that Tom Brady is a game away from the Super Bowl. So it seems like, to me, Tom Brady covered up a lot of mistakes that were made personnel-wise by one Bill Belichick. The point is, again, I'm not saying that Rivera is going to simply be dominate as far as not listen to the GM, not listen to the people that he's hired. I think the opposite. I think Rivera has said that he wants to focus more on coaching, and that's the reason why he brought in a Mark Mayhew, and now he has a Marty Herney, so he can delegate those responsibilities. But ultimately, the final say on player personnel, draft picks, and free agents is in the hands of one Ron Rivera. And to me, I prefer, if it were my franchise, I would prefer that not be the case. But with that being said, we'll see how it works out. Mark Mayhew was, wasn't a great, certainly experience-wise and qualifications-wise. He passes, he checks all the boxes. That's not to be questioned from that standpoint. But you know, he was in Detroit, you know, had a couple of draft picks. You know, you see here Stafford, Sue, and Slay were on his resume. The team was not a winning team during his time in Detroit. But you hope that, you know, him along with Herney and Ron Rivera, that brain trust will, you know, can get some stuff done. Listen, they have some smart people in the building. Make no mistake about it. They have drafted well as of late in the last couple of years. They built that defense. Terry McLaurin certainly was a nice draft pick. Antonio, they've drafted okay. So, you know, there's something to build upon. There is a structure in place. There is, you know, they do have now some adults in the room. So is a far better situation than having Bruce Allen, of course. We all know that. That goes without saying. But again, this is an uncommon structure, having a coach with this much power. That's all I'm saying. It is very rare. Again, Jimmy, remember, you know, like I said, Belichick, Parcells, Jimmy Johnson. And again, remember Jimmy Johnson, you know, Jerry Jones gets jealous because he wasn't getting enough credit. And Jimmy Johnson had a pipeline through the college. He knew the college game. So when he was drafted players, he knew it was a perfect fit for him to be in that position as general, as basically the guy calling shots with personnel and as a coach, because he knew talent, and he knew, you know, he had a pipeline out of the with his, all his years with in Miami and in college football. So we'll see what happens. Again, you know, this is Ron Rivera. The ship is going to go down with Ron Rivera. Things don't work out, you're going to blame. It's only one guy to point to, and that's Ron Rivera. So he put that pressure on him. He put that pressure on himself. When you have the type of power that he has. But the bigger issue, and I think one of the most more important issue, is the diversity of a African American presence within the organization. Again, if you want to be, you know, if you want to be a naysayer from the standpoint of saying you think that this is pandering, you think that they're doing this just to take some stink off the franchise with the name and with Daniel Snyder, you're not wrong. Like, of course, this is part of image reconstruction from this franchise. And by the way, they need some image reconstruction. They had a name that was clear for the better part of, what, 80 years or 70 years, that was a racist name. You have an owner that's been one of the worst owners in the sport, who allowed a bunch of nonsense to go on within his franchise in regards to, you know, allegations of sexual harassment within the workplace and things of that nature. So yes, they need some good pub for this franchise, without question. Yes, we switch over to the NBA. Yes, they can score. We got to see a small sampling, even though there's only been one game, of the new big three in the NBA in regards to Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. So the version of Kevin Durant and James Harden without Kyrie Irving was 2-0. They are all three of them together were 0-1, and now they are 0-1 with no Kevin Durant. So overall, since Harden got to the team, they are 2-2. And the one constant that has been going on since Harden got to the team, since Irving returned from this mini sabbatical, is the fact that they can't stop anybody. Yeah, they can score. They can score with anybody. The offense is going to be lethal. James Harden has clearly accepted his role as the team's point guard, playmaker, facilitator, and which I told you he would. People were worried about James Harden. I'm not worried about James Harden from that standpoint. James Harden knows that he has an opportunity to win a championship, and James Harden, he's going to do all the right things in regards to trying to fit in and not worry about shot attempts and what have you. I was not concerned about that whatsoever. The thing that you have to be concerned about is the fact that this team couldn't guard five statues dipped in concrete. They are atrocious offensively. They gave up 147 points in double overtime, and then last night 125 points in regulation to a Cleveland team that will not make anybody forget about the 2017 Golden State Warriors. So, you know, you want to sit up here and talk about Kyrie Irving's shot attempts? Okay. Or, you know, the fact that he's come in shooting, whatever. Talk about that all to the cows come home. The bottom line is this team they can't stop anybody, and they don't have rim protection. Jared Allen and Andre Drummond have destroyed them in the last two games. I think last night they combined for like 38 and 22 between those two. And good players, by the way. Not we're not talking about, you know, off the scrap meet with those two players. Pretty good players, but not, you know, they're not gonna make anybody forget about, you know, Shaq or Hakeem Olajuwon. I said this when this thing happened. I completely understand why this trade had to be made, Kyrie Irving insurance. But to me, it's a no-brainer, in my opinion, that you trade Kyrie Irving. I just think that's just absolutely a no-brainer that you move him for some pieces, some rim protection. We know, listen, we've seen a small sampling. We know that we've seen when he's on the floor, he's all about basketball. Averaging, 37 points a game through the first two games, something like that. So we know that when he's on the floor, he's going to produce. So I would move him as quickly as possible. And you can get, I'm telling you, you can get the pieces that you need in order for this team to be to challenge the Lakers in terms of winning a championship. They're good enough as is to win the East, in my opinion, though. I wouldn't necessarily pick them to win the East right now. I'll be honest with you, the way Philadelphia is playing, if Embiid continues to play like this, I don't think they would beat Philadelphia in a playoff series. And Embiid would actually have his way in that series. He would dominate that series. So I'm not necessarily I probably favor them to get to the finals based off sheer firepower, but I'm not as confident as I should be considering the fact that you have James Harden and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant on the same team. Like that should be a lock to get to the finals, but it is far from it. And again, the bottom line is that this team needs to not even be great defensively. They need to just be average, middle of the pack defensively, and they would be fine. But giving up 125 and 147 points to the Cleveland Cavaliers is, you know, it's not going to cut it. That's moving forward. So to me, the easy decision to me would be to trade Kyrie Irving. They will not do it. Now they still have some moves to make. There'll be some buyouts. They still have some roster spots to fill up, so they can go out there and get a couple guys, you know, for added depth. But I think it's easy, in my opinion, that would be to move Kyrie Irving. Before I get to Deshaun Watson, a couple of things in the NBA. You saw in the last couple of days, you saw Milwaukee, LA on Thursday. You want to call it a statement game. The Lakers are kind of coasting right now. Clearly the best team in the league. Clearly a step above everybody else. And they haven't even figured out they really haven't even put their pedal to the metal as of yet, which is scary for the rest of the league. All their pieces fit. And the only thing that's bothering me about the Lakers is Anthony Davis. I don't understand why Anthony Davis is coasting and LeBron is not. That's confusing to me. You know, one guy is in his, Anthony Davis is in his ninth year. LeBron's in year 18. So I don't understand. It seems like Anthony Davis is coasting. So I don't understand why that is, but it's working to the tune of a 12-4 record. But I want to focus on Milwaukee because the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I'm going to be honest with you, and I thought this even before this year started, Budenholzer is just not the coach to take that team to a championship. I've watched the NBA long enough to know that there's a ceiling that certain coaches have in regards to how far they can take franchises. At the time, Rick Carlisle had Detroit Pistons. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They said, hey, you know what? Let's bring in Larry Brown to put us over the top. Now, it turns out Rick Carlisle ended up being a championship coach. But, you know, Dumars recognized, hey, we need a guy that can completely take us over, that can completely get us over the hump and take us and put us over the top. And, you know, there are levels to this in coaching. Budenholzer, this system, how he deploys Giannis is not going to work. You've seen this movie before. You can't go 1-on-5. How many offensive fouls is Giannis going to get? I think Giannis has improved as a player, to be honest with you. I think from a skill set, he's better than what he was last year. I just don't think that he is being put in a position to get the most out of his skill and get the most out of that team. And yeah, you look at Milwaukee now, they're going to win their number share of games. They're going to have the excellent point differential. They're going to be this, going to be that. But this will not work out in the postseason. They still, from an offensive standpoint, you know, like I discussed earlier, due to 1-on-5 with Giannis and struggling in half court. And defensively, they still disregard three-point shooting and continuously and choose to defend to take away layups and shots close to the basket. In 2021, that defensive philosophy does not work. There are too many teams that can shoot the three that will shoot your eyes out and shoot the lights out, like Miami did to them last year in the playoffs, to where next thing you know, you will be going home in the playoffs. And forget about getting to the NBA Finals. They won't even get to the Eastern Conference Finals. So to me, it's very simple. If I'm that franchise, there's no way that Budenholzer can be coaching this team next year. I thought I would have got rid of him after last year, to be honest with you. Yeah, I'd be perfectly honest with you. I would have got rid of him after last year. Because their issues are philosophical. Their issues are strategic as far as on both ends of the floor. I think I like their team. I like their talent. Middleton has came back a better player. We know what Drew Holiday can do, and we know, you know, you have the two-time MVP of the league in Giannis. But again, it looks a lot like the same thing with them. Same strategy, different year. So I'm not by any means sold on that team right now. And again, there's a blueprint on how to defend them. There's a blueprint on it. Everybody knows what the wall. Everybody knows, you know, you call it the Giannis wall. And again, Giannis has tried to adjust to it, try to add a three-point shot to his game. He's tried to add, you know, we've seen him take some mid-range shots. Again, that's gonna take time. He's not gonna become a better jump shooter overnight. It's gonna take that takes years. When you're the type of player that he came to the league being, but I think he's unstoppable in the post. Even not having great footwork in the post, I think just on sheer athleticism, if you post up Giannis a number of times down low, either he's going to score or he's above average passer. He's going to find the open person. At 6'11", he can see over the defense. So I think the coaching with Milwaukee is the problem. Look at the rest of the Eastern Conference. You see Miami struggling. You see Toronto struggling. You see Philadelphia. And again, Ben Simmons is still not taking shots, which, you know, I, as a Philly fan, has to drive you crazy. But Philadelphia is playing well. Most importantly is Embiid, who is a legit MVP candidate, has really came to play this year, playing like the Embiid of 2 years ago when he was 27 and 13 and when they were a Kawhi Leonard shot away from being in the East Conference Finals, maybe even, you know, possibly going, you know, going to the finals themselves. That was a loaded Philadelphia team with Jimmy Butler, of course, and J.J. Redick and what have you. But I like this Philadelphia team. I still would pull the trigger on the Ben Simmons, Bradley Beal deal in a heartbeat. I think that is the final piece. That's the final move that needs to be made by them in order to take them to that next level to where they can win a championship. I don't think that you can go in the playoffs with having not having a perimeter player that can dominate in terms of scoring in the fourth quarter and down the stretch of games. And Ben Simmons is a pure facilitator who just does not look to score. And that, again, you're talking to someone who's a big Ben Simmons fan. Ben Simmons is a great defensive player. Ben Simmons is, look, his assist and rebound numbers are up. But you cannot have a point guard that does not want to shoot in 2021. That does not work in the NBA. He doesn't want to shoot. He doesn't want to go to the line. That will lose you a series. That will lose you a playoff series, because we know these playoff series come down to execution in the fourth quarter, just in the last 2 to 3 minutes of the game. So your point guard, he has to facilitate offense, and he has to look to be aggressive. And to me, there's nothing. And I think this year he's at a career low in shot attempts. Got a career low in shot attempts this year. He's only attempting, I think, like 8 shots a game, which is a career low. I told you before the year that number needed to be around 12 to 15, and it's not even close to that. But again, the Bradley Beal move is right there. Again, there, no one will have a better package. Like having Ben Simmons is the ultimate. Like, you know, you're playing space. He's the big joker in terms of trade packages. No one will put together a better package for Bradley Beal than trading, than getting a cornerstone franchise caliber player like Ben Simmons. So that move is there to be made. It'll be very interesting to see if Philadelphia, Elton Brand, Daryl Morey and company will pull the trigger. I know Doc Rivers loves Ben Simmons, but if Doc wants to win another championship, I don't think they can win this way with not having a go-to perimeter player willing to take shots down the stretches of these games late in the fourth quarter. Of course, you have Deshaun Watson and his unhappiness, to say the least, with the Houston organization in terms of how their organization is being run. A lot going on. I'm not going to get to all the nooks and crannies of what's going on. The bottom line is he was lied to by the owner, Cal McNair, in terms of having a decision, in terms of having a say in regards to who's going to be the general manager for the team. And the overall direction of the franchise, has been bad for a long time. You see Bill O'Brien, get all this power without really accomplishing anything, and trade, do dumb trades like trading DeAndre Hopkins, who's of course one of the top, one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in all of football. And Deshaun Watson has had, just had enough of it. Deshaun Watson has a opportunity here to really change how things are done in the NFL. And I say that because you're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in the league and talking about a guy who has a no trade clause. He has the power here to decide where he wants to go. It's a matter of how far is he willing to push this? Like, is he willing to sit out a season? Much harder to force a trade in the NFL than it is in the NBA, and unlike James Harden, Deshaun Watson is a high character guy who seemingly, I don't think, would purposely try to sabotage a locker room and the culture of a franchise to get traded. But to me, we talked about minority hires earlier in the program and the lack thereof overall over the course of the league, over the course of the course of the history of the NFL. The way that Black coaches can get hired and more Black general managers can get hired, if you have a number of these of African-American quarterbacks, superstar quarterbacks, who just take it upon themselves and say, listen, either you start hiring some African-American coaches or we're not going to play for your franchise. We will go, we will either force trades or go to free agent route and just not play for, and just go elsewhere to a place that is willing to hire an African-American coach. Period. Like, imagine if Andy Reid were to retire for whatever reason after winning a Super Bowl this year and Eric Bieniemy doesn't get hired. If Patrick Mahomes goes to the franchise and says, hey, listen, hire Bieniemy or I want out of here, or I will not finish, or I will opt out when I get the opportunity to, or I will, then that changes the entire landscape of how things are done in the NFL. And again, in order for change to happen, something radical has to take place. You cannot count on the system, the machine, to change itself. This is not going to happen. The NFL is not going to change the way they do things. I don't care with the Rooney Rule. I don't care how much the uproar on lack of diversity. We've had the same conversation in regards to the NFL for years upon years upon years. Yeah, every year around this time, we have the same conversation. Why does so-and-so not get hired? Why does so-and-so did get hired? Why does, certain guy, Jim Caldwell should have a job. I know he's interviewing for a job, but he absolutely should have a job. Marvin Lewis should have a job. So we know, we've seen this movie before. We've seen this movie before in the NFL. Something radical has to happen in order to shift and to disrupt this, this system. And Deshaun Watson has the opportunity to really shake things up in a real way. So I'm very interested to see how this thing plays out. Again, if I'm Deshaun Watson, hey, you can keep me, but you better hire Eric Bieniemy to be the coach. Period. It's just that simple. I'll forgive the fact that you didn't let me in on the general manager hire Eric Bieniemy to be the head coach. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of talk. And you'll see a unhappy guy who is initially unhappy go back to just playing quarterback and, go back to things as usual. I don't think that's going to be the case with Deshaun Watson. I genuinely think he's unhappy with the situation. He's considered one of the class guys in the whole league. So for him to come out and start complaining, or to be just upset, says something about the organization, and it says something about that particular situation, what's going on in Houston. So I really feel like that, again, with the NFL, it's not, the NFL and NBA completely different. Like the players in the NBA have basically all the power. Players in the NFL just don't. It's all about the NFL is about the shield. It's about the brand of the NFL. It's about the teams. The NFL purposely shifts away from individuals because they don't want this to be like the NBA. They don't want the players to have that kind of power. But you have a number of young, talented Black quarterbacks that are coming down the pike that are out there. You have Deshaun Watson, you have Mahomes, you have Lamar Jackson, you have Russell Wilsons, you have Kyler Murray. So you know, those guys, if they go in that direction, to those guys really could change things if they were to go in that direction. They really got together and discussed this, because the quarterback is still the most powerful. The quarterback is the most important position in all the sports. You don't have a quarterback, you don't have a team. It's just that simple. So I wish these guys, it might be extreme wishful thinking from my standpoint, and it might be, unrealistic, but if these guys put their heads together and start really and saying, like, look, enough of this, we're going to start forcing some change. We're going to start forcing some change in regards to a lack of diversity. I would love to see it. And again, Deshaun Watson has a chance to make that change and to really force the hand of the Houston Texans and maybe even the NFL if he chooses to sit out and force his way to another franchise and have that franchise have some African American general manager or African American coach. Of course, we are down in regards to the NFL. We are down to the Final Four. People say the divisional playoffs are the best weekend in football. I myself, as always, prefer Championship Sunday as to me the best weekend in football. Because first of all, it's the last real Sunday of NFL football from a standpoint of a doubleheader. We know the Super Bowl is more of an event than it is even a game. And there'll be 2 weeks from Sunday that we'll have to wait until the Super Bowl happens. And you look at these two matchups, all about the quarterbacks. This is you have the old with the new. And you have a legacy game in regards to both of these games are legacy games. Like Green Bay, New England, again, Tom Brady is just, would be just adding to his legacy if he were to just go on to win this game and win a Super Bowl. It would just be adding to his legacy. He has 6 Super Bowl titles, 3 Super Bowl MVPs or 4 Super Bowl MVPs, I should say. The only final piece for Tom Brady is the fact that if he wins without Belichick, I'm sure Bill Belichick won't publicly say it, but I'm sure Bill Belichick is a Green Bay Packers fan, will be a Green Bay Packers fan tomorrow, without question. So from that standpoint, you have, Brady looking just to add on to his already legendary legacy. But this game, out of all 40s quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers, to me, has the most on the line by far. Anybody that's listened to my podcast know how big of a fan I am of Aaron Rodgers. I felt that Aaron Rodgers, like, I think Aaron Rodgers is the most gifted quarterback in terms of total package that I've ever seen. Accuracy, arm strength, athleticism, manipulating defenses, controlling the offense. I think he's on that level without question. And now he's in a position where he has everything lined up for him. He has a home game. First time they'll have a home game in terms of these championship games. He has the coach that, they seem to be on the right page, him and Matt LaFleur. The offense has been cooking. They have a running game. They have despite Barkley Lowry, they have still a great offensive line. Defense has improved. Everything is right there for Aaron Rodgers to win second Super Bowl. Who knows what Patrick Mahomes looks like coming off this concussion? I think Mahomes will play without question. Been practicing all week. So, Buffalo hasn't been there yet. And he's facing a Tampa Bay team that's a good team, not a great team. Good team, not great. Everything is right there for Aaron Rodgers. Everything. It cannot be lined up any better for Aaron Rodgers to go to the Super Bowl and to win the Super Bowl, to win another championship. It's right there. So it is, you know, this is, I think I can make a case this is the biggest game of his career. Like Aaron Rodgers has to win this game. He has to. He has to win this game. Now, I think this game will be very close. It's a borderline toss-up. To me, I think the difference will be the fact that Green Bay defense will do enough to get them by in this game. Hard for me to envision Aaron Rodgers losing this game. For most of the year, for a lot of the year, especially in the last six weeks, I thought that this is Aaron Rodgers' year. Similar to what, you know, you look at the NBA, everything started lining up for LeBron to win a championship. That's how I feel about Aaron Rodgers this year. But again, if we come back next Monday, on Monday, and Tampa Bay's in the Super Bowl, will you be surprised or shocked? Absolutely not. No. You won't be surprised. Tampa Bay's playing well right now. Devin White was by far the best player on the field in that game against New Orleans, where they basically retired Drew Brees. No Antonio Brown. I don't think that's going to hurt as much. Brady has a lot of weapons. So I don't think that loss is a big loss to me. But again, I expect this game. I expect both these games to be very close, very close. In regards to Buffalo, Kansas City, the thing about this game is I don't know what I'm going to get out of Mahomes coming off a concussion. I don't. To be honest with you, I just don't know. I've seen guys come off concussions, you know, not play like they never had a concussion. I've seen guys come off concussions to where it took them 3 or 4 weeks to get right. I don't know what Mahomes is going to look like a week later, but he will have to play well in order for them to beat Buffalo. I'll say that. They will not win, beat this Buffalo team with Mahomes being average or mediocre. Now, does he have to play great? No. But he can't. He will have to play well. He will have to play well for them to win this game. We love how Buffalo is playing right now. Buffalo had a great defensive performance last week against Baltimore. Similar to Milwaukee, Baltimore, the Ravens need some philosophical changes in regards to their offense as well, in regards to Lamar Jackson and their whole how they approach offense. But that's another story for another day. But Buffalo's hot right now. Buffalo, you know, they're on this incredible wave right now. Buffalo, that first game they played, was a winnable game in Buffalo, but for whatever reason, Kansas City ran the ball down their throats. The running back, of course, is hurt. So that's a big loss. I think it's an advantage for the losing teams. Both Green Bay and Buffalo getting another look at Tampa Bay and Kansas City for the second time in the season. I think that's an advantage. Versus playing them only if this was the first time they played. So I'm still going to pick the Dream Super Bowl. So I'm going to go with Green Bay 28-24 and Kansas City 27-23. So I think that we will get our Dream Super Bowl with Rodgers versus Mahomes. But listen, no matchup that comes out of this would surprise me. No, it could be Buffalo, Green Bay. It could be Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Tampa Bay. No matchup that would come out of this would surprise me. Any one of these four teams is capable of going to the Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl. Any one of these four teams. I think these are four relatively closely matched teams. Kansas City still probably has the most talent. Well, definitely. Kansas City definitely still has the most talent out of the four teams, but we've seen Kansas City play. I mean, if you've watched Kansas City over the last 8 weeks, they haven't blown anybody out despite that talent. So I don't expect that to change week 20 of this season. This is week 20. So I don't expect it to change this in this game. I think both these games will be close. I'm going to lean towards the dream Super Bowl of Rodgers and Mahomes. Some real thoughts, of course. You're going to see a lot of Kobe Bryant in these next couple of days. Yesterday you had the anniversary of his, the 15th anniversary of his 81-point game against Toronto. It's been incredible. That was in 2006. And remember, think about that day. That was the same day of the conference championships. Was it Pittsburgh, Denver, and Seattle, Chicago, I believe, were the that was the year that Pittsburgh won the Super Bowl that year. It completely, and this is a late January game in the NBA where normally nobody cares about the NBA during this time period as comparison to the conference championships. This was the lead on SportsCenter. I remember it like it was yesterday. Completely overshadowed the sports world in regards to this 81-point performance, 28 of 46 from the field. He was 18 of 20 from the line, 7 of 13 from the three-point line, 81 points. 81 points. They were down, and they won the game 122 to 104. It was one of the great individual performances of all time, regular season performances that you will ever see. One man carry a team. And that Laker team made the playoffs here. That Laker team, I mean, you're talking about Smidge Parker, Luke Walton, Chris Milne was on that team, Lamar Odom. That was not a good Laker team, to say the least. I think Sasha Bujicic was on that team as well. Ramanovic might have been on that team. Ramanovic was on that team. But anyway, that was not a Laker team to write home about. That was the year, of course, he averaged 35 points a game. He should have been MVP that year. You see the anniversary of that. Of course, Tuesday the 26th will mark the 1 year anniversary of his death, tragically in that the helicopter accident. So that you're gonna see a lot of Kobe stuff in this next couple days, in this week coming up. Just is remarkable that it has been a year. And really, we think about 2020 as a year of just that we haven't seen before. Kobe Bryant's death really set off the year 2020 in terms of, and this might not be the best year per se. As it kicked off, kicked off with Kobe Bryant tragically dying amongst eight other people as well. Certainly not to forget about them. You see a lot of Kobe stuff, and it'll be one of those things where you just wonder what could have been in regards to the next chapter or chapters of his life in regards to where he was going with the movies, storytelling, coaching his daughter and what have you. Just a sad reminder of this legendary icon who was lost at the age of 41. Also, I didn't watch it. There are times in your life when you miss something and it's like, damn, and sometimes you say to yourself, damn, I hate that I missed that. I want to say that I missed the verses with Ashanti and Keisha Cole, and I couldn't be happier that I missed that bullshit. You're talking about, first of all, and I grew up listening, the 90s and early 2000s were my decades, per se. I love R&B. I understand how talented Keisha Cole and Ashanti were, per se. But when this versus matchup came out, I wasn't into it, to be honest with you. I was like, I might check it out. Every versus is not a good versus, per se. Just because you get put on versus does not mean does not mean I'm going to gravitate to it. But this thing was postponed a couple times. You know, Ashanti, had COVID, and it seemed like it just was not meant to be. So you get to Thursday night. You have Lakers and Bucks. The Lakers are playing the Bucks. I completely forgot about this versus. So I get out of work about a little after 9. I was like, oh, looked at my YouTube timeline. Like, oh shit, that's right. Tonight is the Keisha Cole Ashanti versus. So I look on, go on the website, wherever, and no one's there. No one's there. Or no, I just saw Ashanti. No Keisha Cole. Like, damn, wasn't this supposed to start at 8 o'clock? So at that point, I was out. Put on some Tidal, and took my ass home. And took my ass home, went to sleep. And then, I get up the next morning, start reading stuff, start hearing, watching clips. Keisha Cole was an hour and 18 minutes late. It turns out Ashanti was 38 minutes late. Keisha Cole comes in with an attitude, listen to some of the sound. The sound was some shit. I'm glad I missed it. I'm at a stage in my life. I'm 42 years old. I don't have time to waste. And I'm glad, neither one of these artists are on a level to where you should be late at all. This is not Beyonce and Mary J. Blige. This is not Aretha Franklin, rest in peace, and Patti LaBelle. Okay. It's not Marvin Gaye or Sam Cooke, rest in peace. You're not on that level to be late. Okay. To where you have to make an entrance. Nah. I'm good. I'm so, like, listen, again, I understand from a content standpoint, I could have did probably a whole podcast in terms of content on what transpired during that versus, from the stories that I read and some of the clips that I saw and some of the conversation that transpired that happened the morning after. Sure, it would have been good. It was content worthy. Most things are content worthy, especially when you're doing, you're into podcasting, like you're doing podcasts like I do. But you know what? Some shit is just, I can just put aside and like, let me get to sleep. Let me get these G's, man. I work two jobs. I do a podcast, 42 years old. I'm on this early morning workout plan now, where I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go work out. I'm good, man. I'm good money. I don't have time to be wasted. I'm so glad. That I didn't waste my time watching that shit. First of all, I was when they said they were late, when I saw there was just Ashanti and No Keisha Cole and it hadn't started yet, I was out. Like, no, I'm not waiting. You are not good enough, talented enough. I don't put you on that level for me to wait for you when this shit was supposed to start at 8 o'clock. I'm sorry. Nah. And those of you who waited an hour, 18 minutes and complained about it and what have you, you got what you deserved. You got what you deserved. Easy, clearly. You don't wait for Keisha Cole and Ashanti. Come on. Keisha Cole and Ashanti? Really? Nah. So, you know what? I'm glad that I missed it. Got a lot of jokes, of course. Versus with this audio, they can't get right from that standpoint. And again, every versus is not a good versus. Every matchup just shouldn't. There's certain matchups that just shouldn't happen. And I think that this will fall in the category of one of them. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of, I have a birthday shout out. I want to say happy birthday to one Charles W. Quinn the second, or excuse me, the third, aka Chuck. So, you know, I'm not gonna put his age out there. He's older than me. Older than me, that's all you need to know. So happy birthday to him. Hope he enjoys his day with the family. So that's how we're gonna end this program. As always, this is the Real Deal Podcast with Surreal Gerald Quinn. I will see you Monday with another episode of The Wire Remix, Season 4, Episode 5, Alliances. I think that's Alliances will be the name of that episode. This is the name of the episode. We'll be joined, of course, by one, Robert Sapp, who certainly is on pins and needles about his Buffalo Bills. So I will see you next time. Enjoy your weekend. I'm out.